So we take Phytophthora very seriously, or we should be taking Phytophthora very seriously, and at the moment we're not really. We're enabling it to spread throughout our forests by not taking the action that we need to take, difficult as that is. And the more that we enable this organisms to spread and multiply within our forest, the more risk that we have for the whole of the forest ecosystem, not just kauri. Because kauri is what ecologists call a keystone species. It's not just one species. It changes the soil type underneath a kauri forest over millennia to something called a podzol, which is a very leached soil type. And kauri do this to really support themselves and to support the other organisms that like to live with kauri. So what happens in a kauri forest is kauri becomes surrounded by its friends that can live in this soil type. And so there are at least 17 other species that survive with kauri alone. And that's why our kauri forest in New Zealand is totally unique. It's not found anywhere else in the world. And if we lose our kauri, then we lose all these other organisms that depend on kauri as well. So our forest type, Northland kauri forest, will become extinct.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. We are all part of a greater whole as we realize that we are an extension of the biosphere. And when we reflect on the profound wisdom on Chief Seattle's statement that humankind has not woven the web of life, we are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together, all things connect. That we have an intimate connection of sharing breath, not only with trees, but with all biota as well. In the studio this morning, I have Mels Barton. Mels has been involved in the environmental movement and ecological movement here in Auckland for many years, and she is the secretary of the Tree Council, and she's here today because we have got the major challenge for Aotearoa. We've got New Zealand's venerable giant kauri tree under attack. This iconic forest giant is in dire situation here in Auckland and across New Zealand, and it has been taken down by the tiniest of microorganisms. So, kia ora, Mels, thank you for breaking away from your schedule to really see if we can mobilise New Zealanders to be aware of what's going on and then find what action to take.
Yes, thanks, Tim, very much for having me and giving us this opportunity to talk about this terrible crisis that's going on with kauri. Yes, the microorganism that's causing this devastating disease is called Phytophthora agathodicida, and that means, Phytophthora means plant killer, and agathodicida means kauri killer. And so that's what this disease does. It kills kauri, preferably, but I'm sure it's going to end up killing other things as well. Kauri is our canary in the coal mine with this organism, and like many other Phytophthora, there are hundreds of different Phytophthora around the world, and they kill plants devastatingly wherever they are. The potato blight in Ireland was caused by a Phytophthora, and there's one that we also have here in New Zealand, but in Australia they call it the biological bulldozer because it kills everything in the bush. It's like a fire going through there, devastating everything. So we take Phytophthora very seriously, or we should be taking Phytophthora very seriously, and at the moment we're not really. We're enabling it to spread throughout our forests by not taking the action that we need to take, difficult as that is. And the more that we enable this organisms to spread and multiply within our forest, the more risk that we have for the whole of the forest ecosystem, not just kauri. because kauri is what ecologists call a keystone species. It's not just one species. It changes the soil type underneath a kauri forest over millennia to something called a podzol, which is a very leached soil type. And kauri do this to really support themselves and to support the other organisms that like to live with kauri. So what happens in a kauri forest is kauri becomes surrounded by its friends that can live in this soil type. And so there are at least 17 other species that survive with kauri alone. And that's why our kauri forest in New Zealand is totally unique. It's not found anywhere else in the world. And if we lose our kauri, then we lose all these other organisms that depend on kauri as well. So our forest type, Northland kauri forest, will become extinct. And that is not too much of a stretch from where we are at the moment, given the spread of this disease throughout the Waitakere ranges, which is expanding at a rate of doubling every 5 years at the moment. The Auckland Council have released in August a monitoring report which looked at the spread of kauri dieback, and that has shown us that the spread has doubled in 5 years, and that places with the most foot traffic, like Piha and the Cascades, particularly Piha, is at risk of having kauri there go extinct within the next 5 years, because the spread is so large and it's increased so much that the kauri areas in Piha, if it doubles again in the next 5 years, then there'll be no kauri left in Piha. And the council's own monitoring report, which you can see online, it's there on their website, tells us quite clearly and in stark terms that if we don't change the management of our kauri forest in the Waitakere ranges, we risk losing all of the kauri in the Waitakere ranges. And not only in the Waitakere's, because, of course, the more that we walk this disease around the Waitakere's, pick it up on our feet and get in our cars or put on mountain bikes on our vehicles and go to some other kauri forest, like the Hanua's or the Coromandel or Northland, we take this disease with us in the tiny particles of soil on our shoes and our equipment, and we take it to another forest and we infect the trees there and we continue to spread it. So this is a biosecurity crisis that's affecting all of the kauri in New Zealand and threatening all of the kauri in New Zealand. And we have to bear in mind that the range of kauri now is less than 0.1% of what it was originally in New Zealand. So the whole of the north of the North Island was covered in kauri forest originally, and then we turned up and started chopping it all down. And since a lot of it has regrown in places like the Waitakere's, which is really remarkable that we have a second chance to this forest, and now we're being faced by this devastating disease that we are walking around on our shoes, and this will be the end of kauri if we don't do something drastic about it. And the management of the disease to date has been sporadic, shall we say, patchy. So there have been some track closures, there have been cleaning stations put in, and people have been asked to scrub and spray their shoes when they pass these cleaning stations, but unfortunately the vast majority of people are not doing that. And even if they are doing it, the cleaning stations themselves are quite difficult to use, they're quite rudimentary. You're just hopping around on one foot, scrubbing what can be a lot of mud off your shoes in a quite ineffective way. And then imagining, and some people don't even bother to scrub, they just spray with what they think is this magic spray that's killing this organism, and it's not. The trigene, which is in the spray bottles, is quite a basic disinfectant, really. It's not bleach, it's not hydrochloric acid, because you can't put that in bottles and put those where there are children and people. And so it's quite a benign disinfectant, really, and it is not killing this organism sufficiently well for you not to bother to scrub your shoes really, really cleanly first before you spray. And if you don't do that, then you've still got particles of mud and this organism on your shoes, and you will be taking it somewhere else. So a quick spray doesn't do it. It needs to be a really, really good clean and then a spray. And even then, given the state of the tracks in the Waitakere ranges, it's nigh on impossible to avoid moving mud around, and that is the problem. The tracks in the Waitakere ranges are in a disgusting state. They have been for the last 20 years, to my personal knowledge, and, you know, all the tramping clubs and everybody else has been trying to advocate for council to spend more money on these tracks for a very, very long time now. And unfortunately, the investment has not been there. and these tracks have not really been upgraded. There's very few of them that have had a really good amount of work on. And so when you're walking, it is incredibly muddy, and you are moving that mud around, and it's in the mud is where these microscopic particles of this organism that's causing Carly Dieback disease are hiding. And unless you can clean really well and you can scrub and spray at every single spray station that you go past, because they are strategically located around the stands of Kauri that are either healthy or unhealthy. So it's not enough for you to just scrub and spray as you enter the forest and then scrub and spray as you leave the forest. If you pass cleaning stations along the track, that means you're entering a clean area with healthy Kauri or leaving an infected area with unhealthy Kauri, and therefore you need to scrub and spray every time you pass a cleaning station to stop spreading the disease between the healthy and the unhealthy trees. And unfortunately, that's just not happening. And some of Auckland Council's sites are being monitored for compliance, and overall it's down below 50% compliance, and in some areas it's less than 20% compliance. So, you know, 80% of the million people going into the Waitakere Ranges every year are not bothering to scrub and spray their shoes. And that's 800,000 people wandering around with this disease on their feet, and that is what is causing this problem. So I hear a lot of people saying, oh, it's pigs and it's possums and it's birds and it's rats and it's this and it's that. And that's why we don't need to do anything about this, because, you know, it's pointless because all of these other animals are moving it around. And to an extent, of course, these other animals are moving it around. But if it was just them we had to worry about, then it wouldn't be the scale of the problem that we have. If you look at the map where the infection is in the Waitakere's, and Auckland Council have done two major surveys of the infection of Kauri dieback in the Waitakere Ranges. They did one in 2011 and they've done another one in 2016, 5 years apart. And these are not just sort of remote censored estimates of where it is. They've flown over in a helicopter and they've spotted trees that look like they've got symptoms from the air, and then they've sent in a team to ground truth and GPS locate and look for symptoms on every single tree. And they have checked 22,744 trees in the Waitakere Ranges.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of trees. And so they know every single tree in the Waitakere Ranges that has got Kauri dieback symptoms, that is expressing the symptoms. That's not necessarily to say that there aren't others that are infected, because we don't know how long it takes between infection and symptoms to be expressed. But those are the ones that have been checked for symptoms. So those have been GPS located on the maps, and if you look at the map that's on the Tree Council's Facebook page, you can see that the red dots are the infection in 2011 and the black dots are the infection in 2016, and it's like a cancer spreading along the tracks, basically. And the places like Piha, it is just like this massive cancer spreading out across Piha. And the Hillary Trail is really badly infected. In fact, when you look at the map, the infection really follows the Hillary Trail from Tirarangi and Parau all around the coast and up the coast and through Piha and right the way up to Murawai. And then the other place that has got a lot of infected trees is the Cascades. So there's not really any surprise about that, because that's where their most people are, in the Cascades. I think there's over 20,000 people a day going in there in the summer. I don't know how many people are going to Piha, but a lot of people go to Piha. It's probably the most popular place in the ranges. And obviously the Hillary Trail has been increasingly popular and with runners as much as with walkers. And this is why we're seeing the infection spread along these tracks. So if it was just the pigs and the possums and the birds and the rats and the everything else and not us, then we would see a far more even distribution across Kauri, right the way across the ranges. We would not just be seeing this along the track network. These animals do not exclusively use the track network like we do. So that tells us that this is our problem. Yeah, this is our problem.
Yes.
And the other thing that the council have done is to look at exactly where these trees are in relation to the track network. So the other thing that's on the Tree Council's Facebook page is a graph. And the graph shows the infected trees in the distance from the track. And what it shows is that 75% of the infected trees are within 50 metres of a track. So again, that is a really clear indication that this disease is being moved around predominantly by people. 75% of the problem is people. Okay, the pigs and possums, and I mean, not possums so much because they're in the trees, not on the ground. But pigs certainly are an issue because they root around and they eat roots and then they poo them out somewhere else. So, of course, pigs are a problem. But they're less than 25% of the problem, and we are 75% of the problem, and that's what we need to sort out. And yes, of course, we need to do more pig control in the ranges and stop the pigs from getting into the healthy cowry areas, but fundamentally the problem is us, and we absolutely need to own this. We need to accept responsibility for it, stop making excuses that it's pigs or possums or anything else moving this disease around, because we would not have seen the doubling of the infection spread in 5 years if it was only animals doing it. This is us, and we have to do something drastic now to solve this problem. Because if we don't solve this problem and we just carry on letting the infection double in the next 5 years, we will lose all our curry in the ranges. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The council's own monitoring report says that, so I'm not making this up for effect. This is what is going to happen. And the other thing that is going to happen is we are going to take this disease from this heavily infected forest, which is getting 1 million visitors a year, who are then going to visit other forests. We're going to take this disease to those other forests, some of which are not infected yet. So the Hanuas has no curry dieback infection, and the Hanuas have been surveyed in exactly the same way as the Waitakere Ranges. So we are confident that there is no infection in the Hanuas yet. The Coromandel only has a very tiny number of infection sites, which are quite isolated. So the Coromandel is pretty much uninfected at the moment. Can't say the same for Northland. And unfortunately, the detailed monitoring has not been done in Northland in the same way as it's been done in the ranges. But we do know there is a lot of infection in Northland. We just don't know the scale of it yet. So we will be taking this disease to other forests, and that it means that once we know that once the disease gets into an area, then it continues to spread from that area outwards within the same forest. So keeping it out of the other forests is really, really important. And when you've got a massive infection zone like we have in the Waitakere's, allowing people to come and go into there and then go to other forests is just, it's just a matter of time. It's not an if, it's a when we're going to infect those other forests. And that means that eventually we will lose all our curry. So, you know, yes, it is a crisis. It's a crisis of our own making. And it's a crisis that we continue to perpetuate with every single time we go into that forest. And that is why Te Kawarawa Māki, who are the mana whenua for the Waitakere's, have said enough. They have said that it is time for us to get out of the forest and let the forest heal itself, and for us to take some real action here.
You're talking about Māori from this particular region.
I am talking about Māori from this particular region. This is their home. This is their rohi. This is the forest that they are kaitiaki of. They're the guardians. It is Te Kawarawa Māki, this forest. It is these people. That's who they are. And it's a very intimate relationship with this forest, and by losing kauri, Te Kawarau lose who they are, and that is why they have said that a rāhui needs to be placed on the forest.
Good. I'm a keen person for rāhui when it comes to fishing. Can you just tell us a little bit, could explain rāhui for the common listeners, please?
The rāhui is a closure. It's an exclusion of people in the activities that they are doing, which is affecting the forest in this case. And so it is saying that Māori want you to respect this closure and stay out of the forest, stay out of the tracks, in order to enable the forest to heal itself. And that rāhui has been proposed by Te Kawarawa Māki, and they have written to Auckland Council to tell them that they will be putting in place this rāhui. It's not an if, it's a when. They will be doing it. And they have asked Auckland Council to back up their rāhui with a controlled area notice under the Biosecurity Act, which would mean that anyone going into the forest and using the tracks that have been closed would be breaching the Biosecurity Act. So that would be a legal mechanism by which to close the tracks in the forest. And Te Kawarawamaki and the Tree Council and Forest and Bird and the Friends of Regional Parks and the Waitakere Rangers Protection Society have all said that this is what Auckland Council needs to do in order to protect the remaining kauri, both in the Waitakere's and in all of the other forests that have kauri, because this source of infection and moving it to other places is actually one of the main problems that we need to be aware of. I mean, infecting other kauri within the Waitakere's is one thing, but taking the disease to other forests that don't have it at the moment is something else as well. And so Auckland Council at the moment, in their own monitoring report, have stated that by allowing recreation to carry on in the Waitakere Ranges and knowing that that recreation is spreading this organism both within the Waitakere's and to other forests outside of the Waitakere's, Auckland Council is in breach of the Biosecurity Act if they continue to allow that recreation to continue to spread this unwanted organism. And if Auckland Council don't use a controlled area notice to close the Waitakere Ranges, then it's possible that the government's own biosecurity ministry could impose a restricted place notice on the Waitakere's, which would force Auckland Council to implement it. And then Auckland Council really would lose the control of the process. They would be forced to implement and pay for the implementation of the restricted place notice, but they wouldn't be in control of when they took it off or where it was put. So for Auckland Council, really, the use of the controlled area notice enables them to still be in control and to decide when it's safe to take it off again. If they don't use that mechanism, then they leave themselves open, really, to being ridden over the top of, because this is a national biosecurity crisis. This is not just about this one park, and this is not just about inconveniencing people who want to go walking in the ranges. This is about a national crisis for this taonga, this keystone species that is unique in New Zealand and takes an entire ecosystem with it if it becomes extinct. So it's not about spoiling everybody's fun or being a killjoy or exaggerating the scale of the problem for effect because some individuals want the forest to be private or something. It's not about that. It is about trying to ensure the survival of a species. And if Auckland Council do use the controlled area notice to close the tracks, it gives them the leverage then that they need to justify the investment in the track network, because that is the critical thing here. We can allow people back into this forest once we have made the tracks suitable for them to use without spreading this disease. And that just comes down to money and effort, really. The track network, as I said, is in a disgusting state in the Waitakere Ranges. I walked with a bunch of arborists and landscapers and kauri dieback professionals on Saturday, and we walked the Mongaroa track from Anafuta Road all the way down to Piha. Mm-hmm. And at the top of the hill, we started at the top of the hill because that's where the healthy kauri are, and then we walked down the ridge, and as you walk down the ridge, you basically come into the death zone where kauri dieback was really first noticed in the Waitakere Ranges by Peter Madison in about 2007. And the trees are just dying and falling over all over the place down there. It's absolutely shocking. And that track is so bad that you're just walking on kauri roots all the way along that ridge.
You can't do that. Gosh.
So there's absolutely... And, you know, we were walking downhill deliberately from the healthy trees to the diseased trees so that we weren't taking that disease up to the healthy trees. But all the time that we were doing that over a two-hour period, we were passed by numerous walkers coming up the other way with their sticks and their packs and their boots and their, you know, and they just walked through this huge disease zone, probably one of the worst ones in the Waitakere, and they were taking that, the mud and the soil on their shoes and their sticks, inevitably up the hill, past these healthy kauri and out, and then down another track, and you know, and we passed them again on the Glen Esk Road, so they'd come down the Mackenzie track, presumably down to the top of Glen Esk, and you know, so those people inevitably, because there's no cleaning station in between the healthy and the diseased kauri on the Mongaroa Ridge track, they, even if they'd used it, you know, they are still taking that disease with them all the way through those healthy kauri. So when I say it is inevitable that we will cause extinction of kauri in these areas, it is, because how can you not when you're doing that? I mean, and I'm not blaming these people. They didn't know. They don't know. They haven't got a clue.
Yes.
People don't want to kill kauri, but they don't know. They don't understand how easy it is for us to be transporting this disease around.
I agree with you to the degree that even if you have signs and telling of the cycle, lots of people just want to get on walking. They don't want to stand and read all this information. Yeah. And that's another a big one. So the education has to be at home well prior to them leaving for anywhere. And I want to ask this question, how do you close off such a vast area when we always have rogue people doing rogue things?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? That is a million-dollar question, how to do it, and I don't have the answer to that. But I think that education is the key, and understanding what we're doing and why we're doing it. But also, you have to make it easy for people to be able to comply. So the cleaning stations and the design of them is really, really important, and having staff on them to make sure that people actually do it and understand why they do it. Because, I mean, you know, I walk my dogs and I use the tracks myself, and I go to cleaning stations and people try to walk past without cleaning their shoes, and I talk to them and try to explain to them why they should be doing it. And, I mean, I experienced this only yesterday at Kakamatua in Huia, where some people just wanted to walk past, and I talked to them and they argued with me, you know, oh, my shoes don't go here and this doesn't matter, it doesn't apply to me. And, you know, it's just like, by the time you've argued with me about it, you actually could have done it, you know. It only takes you 20 seconds. I didn't say that.
Be mindful.
But it is just like the excuses that are rolled out for not doing this very small thing. But it's not that people, they just don't understand why it's important, because the education hasn't been done at an individual level. And so I think that that's key to it, but also getting the communities on board to almost police their own area. That's really important. So what I think needs to happen is that council and the communities need to work together to implement the Rahui and the controlled area notice, so that those communities understand why it is so important that we're doing this, that it is only a temporary closure, because that's really, really important for people to feel they're not being locked out of here forever. This is a temporary closure to enable us to get the money to upgrade these tracks to future-proof them for the forest. And so once people have been, my experience of it, because I've done quite a lot of talks and public meetings, and this question always comes up when I talk about kauri. And when you've given people the information and they've seen the maps of where the spread is for themselves, and they've seen the graphs of how close the trees are that are infected to the track network, and they can't be in denial anymore about the fact that they are part of the problem, that we are all part of the problem. When you, in the absence of any information, people make up their own stories, and they're easier to believe than the truth quite often. And so I think that the council and us as community organisations need to do a roadshow around the Waitakere Ranges communities to show people the evidence. Show people the evidence.
Most definitely.
Factual evidence. It's not assumption. It's not interpretation. It's facts of how many trees have been surveyed, where they all are, exactly how many are infected, how close that is to the track network. I did a talk at Piha a couple of months ago, and there were some young runners there. And obviously, runners who are running in the ranges, they probably don't stop and clean at every cleaning station because they're running. I get that. But these guys, they heard my talk and they listened and they heard all the questions, and there were a lot of them that went back and forth in the discussion. And they came up to me afterwards and they said, "Mel's, we don't feel like we can run on those tracks anymore."
Oh, good.
And I was really touched by that.
Yes.
I actually felt like I'd had a bit of a breakthrough there.
Mm.
And I realised after I'd talked to them that it was that giving them the facts. And they said that we can't not know this now. We know this now. We didn't know this before, and we know this now, and so we will change our behaviour.
Well done, well done.
But that's, you know, that's a couple of people.
I know.
You know, we have to reach a lot of people here, and and those people have to make that conscious decision themselves that they are going to take this action in order to protect our forests for the future. Because, as I say, it's not an if, it's a when we make kauri go extinct if we don't change our behaviour and we keep out of the forest and we put the pressure onto Auckland Council and the government to give us the money to spend it on upgrading these tracks. Because if we can make these tracks dry, if we can reroute them off kauri routes, we can avoid the areas of infection, and we can protect the kauri that are still healthy by closing those areas off and taking the tracks away from the healthy kauri.
That's the way.
Then we can continue to use this forest. But if we don't, then we will kill all our kauri. It's as simple as that. So we need to invest a lot of money in the infrastructure, and it's not cheap. No one's pretending that it's cheap or that it's going to be overnight. But if we don't do it, then we know what the outcome is going to be. And the thing is, as well, it's not just about kauri, because there are lots of other organisms that are coming to this country that are really damaging to our ecosystem. There's another one, I mean, we all have heard of myrtle rust now, and that's airborne, which is even worse.
It is.
So, that, you know, like, yeah, exactly.
On the back foot.
Yeah, well, my advice to you about myrtle rust is keep your eye out for anything that looks unusual, and if you see it, do not touch it. Just take a photograph of it and call Ministry of Primary Industries or Biosecurity, as they're called now, and report it. Do not touch it, because if you touch it, you release the spores into the air and onto your clothes, and you'll be spreading it everywhere you go. And again, they're microscopic. You can't see them. So if you see something unusual on plants, don't touch it. Just take a photograph of it and tell somebody about it. So that's myrtle rust, but there are other nasties in the soil.
I'm speaking with Mels Barton. She is the Secretary of the Tree Council here in Auckland, and their website is thetreecouncil.org.nz. But you can also find her on Tree Council on Facebook. Tree Council on Facebook.
And at the moment in Hawaii, there's something called rapid Ohia death, and that is wiping out the Pahutukawa on Hawaii at the moment, and that is soil borne. It's in the soil again. And so, okay, it's not in New Zealand yet, but how long is it before that microscopic organism comes in on somebody's tramping boots that's been to Hawaii?
I've tramped in Hawaii.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I'd be scrubbing my boots when I got home. But, you know, it doesn't take very much to bring these diseases here. And once they're here, then again, we'll be walking that around in the Waitakere's, and that'll be wiping out the Pahutukawa. So it's like, the infrastructure improvements that need to be done are about future-proofing our forests so that we can all continue to use it in safety without spreading these diseases, because it's not just one thing, it'll be lots of things. And we're talking about infrastructure that has to last another, you know, 50 years. And so let's put the money in now. Really, what kauri dieback disease is a gift. It's an opportunity for us to get the money to invest in our infrastructure so that we can continue to cope with the massive amounts of people that want to use our forest. And, you know, this is a forest that I want to show off. It's why I came to New Zealand, you know.
I agree.
I want to be in there, and I want to be using it, and I want to be able to show people how beautiful it is. But it's not safe for us to do that right now, because we're killing the forest by doing that right now. And so I want the agencies to spend the money to enable all of us to get back in there and do that, because that is what New Zealand is all about. It's about this beautiful, unique ecology that we have here. We're an island that's been cut off for 85 million years, and it has evolved into this totally unique biodiversity. There is no other New Zealand. There is no other kauri. None of it will just come back by magic. Things go extinct and that's it, gone forever. You don't get them back. And kauri will take so much else with it. when it goes. We will never have Karoo Forest again. It will be gone. And all those other plants, I mean, on Saturday when we were walking, we even came across the little orchid that lives exclusively with Karoo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was amazing to just stumble across that on the track. But that just shows that they are there. And yeah, and that was a real, really special thing for us to see. But there's many, many trees and many, many plants that coexist with Karoo and with Karoo alone. So, you know, the nature of our forest would change. The other thing that I would say about Phytophthora, while we're talking about the forest as a whole dying, is, as I said, in Australia, the Phytophthora attacks many species, not just one. And 5 years ago, we had some of the experts from Australia come over to a conference on Phytophthora here. And they warned us that this Phytophthora is very, very unlikely to just be affecting one species. That Karoo are very sensitive, clearly, and they're being knocked over really quickly by this organism as it has first appeared in our soil at really low levels. But the chances of it stopping with Karoo as a host are pretty much nil. So, and there has been one piece of research done so far on another species and with this organism, and that's Tanekaha. And an MSc student has written a thesis on the effects of Phytophthora agathodicida on Tanekaha, and it is killing it. So that's the next one off the block. But how many more species will succumb to Phytophthora agathodicida in our forest if we just carry on allowing it to spread and multiply and go to other forests and increase over the next however many years? Karoo are really, really sensitive. I know they're the kings of the forest and they're these massive trees, but their root system, which is how this organism gets in, is actually very shallow and very, very sensitive, and it's very close to the surface, and they really do not like being trampled on.
Yes.
They don't like being mowed. They don't like having stuff put on their roots and being walked on and the soil compacted and driveways and all of that. They hate it and they don't do very well when that happens to them. And so it's not really surprising that a root rot, basically, which is what this disease starts off as, kills Karoo really quickly. And it does rot the roots, and it rots the little nodules that these fungal organisms that help Karoo survive, called mycorrhizae, it rots them out as well. So what happens to the Karoo is it ends up starving, because these mycorrhizae, these organisms, they help the Karoo to get their food out of the soil. And so if they're gone through this Phytophthora attacking them, basically, then that in itself doesn't help. And then it moves up the trunk and the tree bleeds to try and stop the disease moving up its trunk. And it seals off the water and food cells that are transporting water from the roots to the canopy. And, of course, that's why the canopy starts to die. And that's why we call it dieback, because the canopy starts to die. But there really is no coming back. All of the trees that get Karoo dieback die. So the other thing that people often say to me is, oh, well, there'll be resistant trees. You know, it's a bit like the cabbage tree.
Yes.
It'll come back, la, la. Well, it's not at all like the cabbage tree, actually, because the cabbage tree actually has quite a short lifespan. And the Karoo lives for over 2,000 years. So how exactly is a tree that has a 2,000-year lifespan going to evolve its way around an organism that's going to kill it in decades? It's just not feasible that it could evolve
fast enough
to deal with this organism. It's absolutely not going to happen. And the other problem is that when you've got Phytophthora agathodicida in the soil, Karoo seed, and their seeds actually germinate really, really quite quickly. And then the seedlings, they stay in the soil and around the trees, and they stay quite small. So you might have a seedling that's there for about 30 years. It's really, really small. And then when a Karoo or some other tree around dies, it creates a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And these seedlings then take off for the light. And so what Karoo have is a seedling bank. They don't have a seed bank. Their seeds do not survive for years and years and years. They grow little seedlings and they survive for years and years and years. But the problem is, when you've got Phytophthora agathodicida in the soil, the seedlings don't survive, they die. And so basically this is our last generation of Karoo. Where we've got agathodicida in the soil, there won't be any more Karoo coming up afterwards, because the seedlings aren't surviving. And when you go into an infected area, you can't see any babies anywhere. Because there aren't any, because they're all dying. And that was a really stark contrast on Saturday when we walked from the healthy area where there were loads of little babies all over the place. And then we walked down into the diseased area and there weren't any babies, and all there was dying trees and dead poles and trees with no bark. And yeah, and basically there won't be any more kauri in that area of the Maungaroa Ridge Track because there's nothing that can come up to replace them.
Right, so when is this action plan going to be enacted, do you know?
Well, Te Kawarau have said that they're going to put in the Rahui before Christmas. But what it needs to be followed up by is the controlled area notice by Auckland Council. And I'm not seeing that action. I'm not seeing that happening yet. And I'm really disappointed that Auckland Council are dragging the chain, not getting the importance of this, and not seeing the urgency of their action, because we're about to go into another summer and another million people traipsing this disease around the ranges. And we know what the outcome of that is going to be. It's just more disease spread. And so we need to put the pressure on Auckland Council for them to do the right thing here, all of us. And we all also need to respect the Rahui. Once that Rahui goes in, I will not be going and using those tracks anymore. And I ask everybody to respect the Rahui and not use those tracks anymore, and to ask other people not to use those tracks anymore and explain to them why. And tell your councillor that you want them to put in the controlled area notice and you want them to put in the money to spend to upgrade these tracks. Now, the long-term council's long-term plan is starting to be put together at the moment, okay? And that's spending for the next 10 years. And the Community and Environment Committee have put on the agenda for the long-term plan $51.48 million to be spent on kauri dieback over the next 10 years. Now, I don't know whether that's enough money, but it's a good start. And I would hope that if the council could agree to spending that sort of money, then the government would come to the party as well and we could accelerate the infrastructure upgrade and front-end load that so that we could get the tracks upgraded as fast as possible, because that's what needs to happen. So you need to support the councillors to actually agree to that money, because that money translates through to how much we pay in rates. And it's no good us all whinging and moaning about how much our rates cost if we want these things to happen in our council. We want rail to the airport, or we want the central loop, or we want more housing, and we want better environment, and we want our kauri to be safe. All these things cost money, and we are the ones that pay for it. And okay, over 10 years or whatever, and the council borrows a lot of money and we pay the interest on it and all the rest of it, and you can reprioritize things. But at the end of the day, it costs money, and that comes from us. And we have to be supportive. You can't have your cake and eat it. And the environmental programs in the council have been cut drastically over the last 10 years.
I noticed this big time.
This is not Waitakere City Council anymore. This is the Auckland Super City, and its priorities have been different, and they have not been in environmental protection, and the pest control has suffered, and the management of the tracks has suffered, the regional parks have suffered. All of these things that we really value as Aucklanders, that make Auckland different from other cities and that make it the jewel in the crown, really, in terms of our parkland particularly, and the thing that people come here to visit. And we've been degrading it and not investing in it and taking shortcuts and to save a few dollars here and there. And it's a very poor investment, because it ends up costing you far more in the long term. Possum control, for example, if you don't do possum control on an ongoing basis, then the numbers build up, and then when you decide you do want to get on top of it, it costs you 10 times more. Mm-hmm. So it's a real false economy to cut corners on the environment. It has to be a constant investment in keeping on top of things, otherwise it just all goes very quickly. And that's where we're at, I'm afraid. We've had a lot of years of underinvestment in our environment, and that's why we're seeing these problems. The trees in the Waitakere are under stress. They're under stress from the fact that we chopped this forest down and burned it. once.
And they're trying to grow up again through it.
Well, we destroyed their podsole.
Yes.
We destroyed their podsole by doing that. So they're not growing in their ideal soil anymore. So they're stressed from that point of view. Then we've got a million people a year tramping around all over their roots and compacting the soil and making them unhappy from that point of view. We've got pests like possums browsing them and pigs rooting around. They don't like that either. And then we've got this disease that's come in. And that just, if you think of a triangle supporting the health of a tree, if the other two sides are not being supported and then you get a pest like this organism, Kari dieback disease, coming in, it's just going to knock the tree over because the tree's not doing that well anyway. And then this happens. So that's really sad, but there's something we can do about it. And that's what we need to do now. And I know it's a really massive thing to ask people not to go into the forest. I know that. It will affect every single one of us, and I don't ask for it lightly. But it is what we have to do if we want to save our forest. There is no other option. We need to stay out of it. We need to upgrade the tracks and the cleaning station, put the money in now, and make this forest safe for us to go back into. You know, it can happen in stages. This is not a bad news story. And I really want the councillors to understand that this is not a bad news story. You know, we can close the whole forest and tomorrow we can open a track. You know?
That's right.
Because
increment.
This track doesn't have kari on it, or some work's been done, or we've upgraded the cleaning station, and then the next day we can open another track. And every single day that we do that, it's a good news story, and it's another good thing that we're doing, and we can reinforce the message about the positive behaviour, and we can incrementally open these tracks over however long it takes us to upgrade the infrastructure. You know, like I said, it's temporary. There are not kari on every single track in the Waitakere Ranges. We need to do this in a structured and sensible way. But you can't just close two tracks and leave the rest of the forest open and think that you're going to make any difference to the spread of this disease. You're not. That's the wrong way round to do it. You have to close it first and then open them gradually as you do the upgrades, not the other way round. Otherwise, we keep spreading the disease and we will lose all our kari.
I agree. And there's so many other walks you can have. You'll have to learn beach walks.
Well, we do have 27 regional parks in Auckland. We have 27 regional parks, not one. You know, go and explore the other ones. They're beautiful. They're amazing resources that we have. And yes, of course, I understand that we're worried that if we block people out of the Waitakere's, then they're all going to go to the Hanuas and take kari dieback there. But the Hanuas actually have a better track network. They have less track entrances. It wouldn't be too difficult to control the people going into the Hanuas and have better cleaning stations there that are staffed to make sure everybody's doing the scrubbing and spraying really well before they go into the forest. It would be much easier to manage the Hanuas and control people going in there in a safe way than it is in the Waitakere's currently. So I think that the activities that are going on in the Waitakere's at the moment, they just need to be spread out over the other 27 regional parks, and let us get on with upgrading the tracks and making the infrastructure for all of us better. Because who doesn't want to walk on a decent track? Who wants to walk around in mud up to your ankles, tripping over roots all day? It just makes it 10 times harder. So let's actually put the infrastructure in there. It will benefit every single person that's using the Waitakere's forever. You know, we'll all get a better experience out of it when that's been done, and our forest will be safe.
Yes. From a scientific point of view, the mitigation of, is there a way through it? I mean, human beings, science is spending vast billions on trying to find all sorts of ways to heal different illnesses and diseases for the human body. How is science, have you heard any feedback or anything whatsoever as to the scientific response to this particular organism, this microorganism?
Well, there has been and there is research ongoing, but this is a Phytophthora, and unfortunately we know that Phytophthora are devastating plant diseases, and I think it's extremely unlikely, it's not impossible of course, but I think it's very unlikely that there'll ever be a cure for this Phytophthora. I describe it to people a bit like AIDS, you know, for plants.
Yes.
So We probably won't be able to cure it, but we can control it with drugs, and we can keep trees alive, and I'll talk about that in a second. So we can give trees a chemical that will keep them alive, but the way that we control this disease is really by the hygienic change of our behaviour in not spreading it. So much like AIDS, you know, that has been controlled to a large extent by people changing their sexual behaviour and being more hygienic. And that's exactly how we need to behave around kauri, well, our forests in general, not just kauri, is be more hygienic and be aware that we're potentially spreading an organism that we can't see. So, yeah, I doubt very much if there will ever be a cure for kauri dieback disease. It is down to us, really, about whether we stop this disease from spreading any further or not. And, yeah.
Well, there's many groups. You've got kaurirescue.org.nz who are aware of the urgency. Are there any other champions in government who really want to support you? And I'm not necessarily calling out a name of a particular person, but if there is and you think they deserve to be acknowledged, we need the community at large to come together on this.
Oh, we absolutely do need the community to come together on this. We're not going to solve this problem without we do have the community on board with this. Every single person needs to be taking this action for us to solve this problem. And no, I'm afraid I can't name any individuals in government or in parliament who are championing this particularly at the moment, unfortunately. I'm hoping that they're going to step forward and take up the mantle and be the champion for kauri dieback, but I'm not exactly being overwhelmed at the moment by people wanting to do that for us. So I'm really hoping that once they've got their feet under the table, the new government, they are going to grasp the nettle and come and start offering us some solutions. Because up until now, really, the management of this disease over the last 9 years has been appalling, not to put too fine a point on it. It's been appalling and it's been lacking. And that's why the majority of people don't understand their role in their spreading of this disease, because there's been very little information put out to the public. And the management has been piecemeal, and some areas have done better than others. And despite the fact that we've still got this organism doubling its spread, there is no urgent action ongoing, either at a council level or a government level. And that includes DOC. MPI have been appalling. It's been like swimming through treacle dealing with MPI.
I agree, on multiple levels.
On multiple levels and with multiple issues, not just with kauri dieback. And obviously I was delighted when the new government broke up MPI, because that is exactly what needed to happen. But
yes,
the problem has not gone away, because the staff that were in MPI are probably still
migrated,
just moved into
yes,
the new biosecurity department. So, you know, they're still there and they'll still be causing the same problems. So we've been advocating for the management of kauri dieback disease to be taken out of the government agency and put with a community trust model, much like they've done with the management of tuberculosis, much like they've done with the management of predator free. They've basically said, okay, a single organisation that's just focused on this issue that can then work with all of the agencies, so biosecurity, DOC and the councils, whatever, but this one organisation is just focused on this issue. It manages the programme. It's not being distracted by all the other things that agency otherwise would be doing, because that's what's been happening with MPI. And they're focused on the outputs and the outcomes that you want for this programme, which is public education and buy-in and investment in the infrastructure and putting in the hygiene methods and all the rest of it, and managing the programme properly and doing the research, because the research programme is just ground to a halt under MPI. And it's not been happening, and that's why we're not learning anything. We don't even know what else this disease infects, and we don't know how to kill the organism. You know, those two fundamental questions that you would think, if you're trying to control an organism, you need to know what else it's in, what are the host plants it's in, and how do you kill it. Those two pieces of research have not even been started in the last 9 years under MPI's management of the kauri dieback research program.
And the MPI, the primary industries.
Yeah. So, you know, how are you going to control an organism if you don't know how to kill it and you don't know what else it infects? I'm sorry, but it's pretty basic, and that's what's not been happening. So this program needs to be grabbed by the scruff of the neck. It needs to be dragged away from these people who have not been managing it for the last 9 years. And it needs to be put with a bunch of people who have the expertise and are capable of doing it and are determined to do it and work with everybody that they need to work to get it done. And let's get this show on the road. Because we've got a very small window here of time before we can do something about this. And if we dither around for the next 10 years, it'll be too late for Kauri and it'll be too late for our forest, and this organism will be embedded in every single forest that we have, and it will start to kill other things as well. So this is about our forests as a whole, not just Kauri, and us taking control and doing something about it right now. And I really put the call out there to the government to give us the opportunity to do this and give the councils the money. This is going to cost a lot of money, but they spent $85 million in 1 year spraying West Auckland for the painted apple moth because it was going to kill pine trees. Yeah? So the money, when you need it to be somewhere, it's there. And they haven't even spent half that much on Kauri so far in the last 9 years. Not even half that much. And how many people come 12,000 miles to see a Kauri tree? It's a huge tourism spinner. And when our forests are dead, then people won't be coming to see them, will they? So it's an investment in all of our future, not just for the ecology, but for our tourism industry, for everything and everybody, and for what it is to be a New Zealander. And so we need to do this, and we need to do it now. So give us the money, honey. Give us the money. Yes. and give us the power to actually implement this and get on with it. And let us talk to our communities and let us get people on board, because nobody wants to kill Kauri. Everyone wants to save Kauri. So let's enable people to do that. Please.
Oh, excellent. Excellent, Mels. Yes, we've action plan right now. Thank you so much for coming and letting us all know the whole story, giving us the data. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Mels, we're going to squeeze in Kauri Rescue. Can you give a quick synopsis so that people know that what we can do?
So Kauri Rescue is a citizen science project funded by the Biological Heritage Science Challenge, and it's enabling people who've got kauri dieback on their property to treat their own trees and keep them alive. So it's not a cure for kauri dieback, it's a band-aid really. It's not a vaccine, and it doesn't get rid of the infection in your soil, but it enables the trees to stay alive. And so for people in Te Rārangi and all over the country, we've got in Northland as well now, we're giving people kits and we're giving them the knowledge to enable them to treat their own trees and keep them alive. So if you've got infected trees on your property or you think you have, then go to kaurirescue.org.nz and sign up for our project and let us help you save your kauri trees.
Lovely. Thank you. That was Mels Barton telling it as it is. She's the Secretary of the Tree Council here in Auckland, but as she mentioned lastly, she's kaurirescue.org.nz. There are many things we can add to this important story. New Zealand writer Gary Cook adds another chapter to this. Gary shared that the understanding of some Māori elders that dieback is the physical expression of apathy due to loss of identity and purpose of young kauri, as a result of the slaying of their wisdom keepers, the ancient kauri. Driven by greed, the milling of kauri left a nursery of baby trees without the guidance of elders, in the same way that the social experiment of the nuclear family has also stripped away intergenerational support from most of humanity. It is time to return a voice to all wisdom keepers and for kauri to stand strongly among those keepers of sacred codes and wisdom. We know kauri to be channels and conduits of higher frequency energies and the frequencies that underpin the law of oneness, which our planet and all who dwell here will once again hold as their truth, as their preferred reality. The uptaking of their role is pivotal for the young kauri's journey back to full health and vigour. Although we must allow them their own journey, we can assist them to reclaim their power and roles once more through the trinity of the threefold flame, which invites cooperation and support in the spirit of oneness. Yes, some are singing to kauri as well. There is an intimate connection between trees and humans, and it is important to acknowledge these venerable giants of our Aotearoa forests. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia Kaha and Haere Uraa.